Sponsored by 1010 Podcasts.
The Celtic Exchange, a fresh insight on Celtic Football Club.
Welcome to episode 14 of the Celtic Exchange. This is Tino, and today I'm joined by Miff and by Chris. So the third Glasgow derby of the season ended in a stalemate this weekend as Celtic once again dominated play, but couldn't convert the possession stats into goals. It's the last time we'll play Rangers at Celtic Park this season, at least in the league that is, but will John Kennedy and today's man of the match, Scott Brown, be around when the fixture resumes next season? And while you're at it, you can also add another half dozen or so others to that list of potential exits from the club this summer. We'll cover all of this and more in this week's episode. Miff, what's your thoughts on the result and performance against Rangers? Was it an improvement for you and what we've seen so far this season?
Hi, Tino. Hi, Chris. I think the level of performance was a slight improvement for me. I felt we dominated the game and should have won it. However, that therein lies my problem with today, is that we should have won the game. We didn't. We found a way not to win it. The concession of the goal is just so frustrating, but it's a movie we've seen before. That's kind of where I'm at with it. Yes, another marginal improvement in performance. Should have scored more than one goal. A lot of players looking bright. Probably Kenny, the only one that didn't get pass marks for me. Shape looked good. But here we go again. You know, should have won a game. We didn't. It's just been the story of the season.
Yeah, I think you're right. You know, definitely better to watch and definitely improvements from what we've seen recently. But ultimately, you know, it's 1 point rather than three. Chris, what's your own take on it? What did you think?
Reasons to be optimistic, I think, from the game today. I think we have got a lot to look forward to rather than be worried about. Personally, myself, and I'm trying to be optimistic considering the circumstances very recently. I thought the kind of performance was really, really good, the exception of the goal in the second half. And it just gives you a wee bit of optimism going forward for the future. In Scottish Cup, we've got something to play for this season. We've got reasons to be hopeful, basically. So again, the performance gives us a wee bit of again, optimism. Must do better, but again, we need to get 3 points. We need to basically, again, that's twice now that's happened. And I just feel as if we have got a wee bit of glimmer of hope. That is that. So try to be as optimistic as I can.
I'll never condemn you for optimism. I think definitely in terms of some of the things to be more hopeful of was some of the individual performances. So we've seen a bit more out of guys like Diego Lax out today. Callum McGregor showed some stuff. Christie and spells. Moy El-Younoussi showed definite glimpses of the player that we know he can be. Miff, who stood out for you? And was there anyone that didn't quite get pass marks?
Well, as I referenced there, I don't think Kenny merits any pass marks just because his involvement in Rangers' goal, both from the concession of the corner kick for almost inside Rangers' half, which is, you know, it's certainly a new way for us to find out to mess things up after getting into the lead. And then letting Morelos wander off the back. And well, that's probably less of a crime given that the striker always has that instinct to go towards a goal, whereas the defender tends to just follow the path of the ball. But such is life. He definitely will bear the brunt of it, a lot of the blame from Celtic fans, and justifiably so. In terms of performances, I thought Lax out was really good, really bright, and seemed to offer more in the final third than we've seen from him up until now. I mean, what you couldn't question for Lax out was his all-action sort of style, which is always quite appealing to fans, especially in a team like Celtic that's been relatively struggling this season. But there actually seemed to be a bit more quality about him. In the final third, his link-up play with McGregor and El-Younoussi was particularly good as well. So I think Laxalt merits a mention. Odson Edward as well was really, really bright, and most of their good stuff came through him in the final third as well. So I think everybody merits a pass mark. You know, Christie and McGregor's endeavour is never in question. They had a wee bit more quality about them today in terms of their movement going forward, and Brown. Brown had one of his better games of the season as well.
So obviously, pre-match, he's made a pretty big gesture in approaching Glenn Kamara in light of, you know, the troubles that they had on Thursday night. And I thought it was, you know, an important thing to do in a real sign of leadership there. And I think and hope it seems to be appreciated across the board. So that first and foremost is a strong move by Scott Brown pre-match today. Beyond that, of course, in terms of his own individual performance, as you said, Miff, I thought he he played pretty well. He'd obviously got man of the match via Sky Sports. And I think certainly up to around about the 75th, 80 odd minute, he done pretty well. And that's, you know, we've spoken about it a lot. That's how we should be using him. We don't need to have him for 90 minutes time after time. But he shows certainly in pretty decent spells, not just in 15 and 20 minutes, but, you know, at least an hour or so of a game that he can have a serious impact. Chris, what was your own thoughts on how Scott Brown done today?
I thought he was very impressive. I really did. He put a complete boss in midfield yesterday, controlled the game, and that's just typical Scott Brown. So I thought, again, very, very impressive. But again, I think it shows his, again, you've already mentioned it, showed his leadership before the game, showed his leadership on the park. And I think for Scott Brown has to be managed, right? You mentioned in terms of the 75th minute, in terms of when he substituted or whenever he came off. But that should have been him all season this year. And I think it speaks volumes where we're at with Celtic. And Celtic this season, unfortunately, haven't been managed appropriately for one reason or another. And I think that speaks volumes for a guy like Scott Brown as well, because he's effective in his own way. And again, we've seen it from today's game as well. He's effective in terms of just being that presence in the park as well. And again, that's what he should have been done this season. That should have happened this season. And unfortunately, for one reason or another, it's just not happened. But yesterday, it was very impressive. Again, usual Scott Brown bossed it. And as I said, I thought he was really, really good. And I think, I've mentioned in the show before, I think there's a future for Scott Brown at Celtic in one way or another. And I said, I think even from a playing capacity, a very limited playing capacity in the future, but I think he's still showing that he's got capability there anyway.
Yeah, just on a couple of those points there, Chris, I think they're ones that we've mentioned in previous episodes around squad management hasn't been done correctly. So it's pleasing to see that element maybe being addressed by Kennedy, even if it's in a short tenure, but also concerns over our inability to put forward a 90-minute performance. That still remains, and I don't think today's done anything to quell that. There seems to be a fitness issue for us to be able to stretch that over the 90 minutes, but also the substitutions as well. And I think it would be remiss of us, regardless of how positive we might feel about another improved performance in a game we should have won, is that the subs, to me, were absolutely baffling. Not just necessarily the personnel, but the timings and what they were hoping or supposed to achieve.
Yeah, and that's, you know, you lads have heard me speak often enough about, you know, a lot of the things that I admire about John Kennedy and the things that I think he does really well, and the way he had his set up and, you know, tactics, formation, etc. All good. But substitutions are a key part of football. And I think, not just today, I think in the previous couple of games, he's made some questionable subs. It was great, of course, to see James Forrest coming back in. But two things, should we have waited till the 78th minute and should we have brought off David Turnbull?
Well, the whole Turnbull thing baffles me, especially what my eyes were seeing was Turnbull driving the team forward, getting in between the lines and creating space and playing nice wee passes forward. Also, his set piece delivery was excellent as well. Seemed to always be, you know, undoubtedly Elanusi could have probably had a couple, or Welsh and Elanusi could have had goals for the set pieces. But it just remains an issue for me. I think Forrest's introduction, Forrest did a few nice touches when he came on. It was great to see. But one thing we should bear in mind amongst all of this is that John Kennedy is still new to this, so we should expect him to make mistakes because he's a rookie manager who's been thrown in at the deep end. Where I have an issue with this is around the fact that he was there in the previous tenure, where that was also clearly an issue. So I would have liked to have think that's something he would have addressed and made sure that he got right, or certainly did better at.
I think from John Kennedy's point of view, and again, this may all come back to the fact that he is very much a disciple of Brendan Rodgers, he is quite happy with the patient build-up. He doesn't like to force the issue, doesn't like to go gung-ho or anything like that. And I think we've seen that. And I think that's reflected in the fact that he waited till the 78th minute. I think because we were dominant, keeping possession and pretty much, you know, in the ascendancy in the game, he felt, why change it at 60 minutes or 65 or 70 if we're on top? From a fan's point of view, though, you're watching it and you're thinking, you know, can we get forward a bit quicker? Can we show a bit more drive here and really take the game to them? And it didn't really happen. And I suppose that leads us on to to the question, to pick up your point, Miff, I think it's a great point that to a huge extent, but you know, it's easy to forget because he's been around so long, but this is only John Kennedy's third game as a manager in his own right, albeit as interim manager. And he himself, yeah, he is learning on the job, and he'll maybe reflect on the game, you know, when he's doing his analysis and say, I should have changed it sooner. I should have changed him for him, or whatever it might have been. And I think it just stresses the importance of the fact that, so obviously, you know, there's been talk about guys like Enzo Maresca, for example, coming in to potentially replace Neil Lennon / John Kennedy. And that doesn't work for me. Bringing in a guy who's only ever coached at under 23 level so far, to basically come in and experiment with the Celtic job or try and learn on the job, I just don't think it's feasible. I think we need to be looking for someone who's tried and tested, has been over the course and distance, and knows what it takes to win games of football, and isn't just trying things, because it's so big this summer, we can't afford to make mistakes, and we can't afford another, dare I say, Ronnie Dyla type, where it looks on paper that it might be great. And I think Maresca looks like he may be an extremely talented coach, but we can't afford to be his stepping stone to see if it works or not. Miff, where are you at? Does it have to be someone of experience for you, or would you be happy with the more experimental route?
Yeah, it would have to be somebody of experience for me, but all I would say is that I don't think there's many trophy-laden managers out of work or in work batting down the door to become Celtic manager. Conversely speaking to that, Rodgers wasn't a trophy-laden manager. It was more about the job that Rodgers had done at Swansea that made me think he would be a good fit for Celtic, although we all have to remember that Rodgers was damaged goods when he came to Celtic, and the relationship benefited both parties, although it now seems to be benefiting Mr. Rodgers more than us, but it's a different story. So I think you want the romantic notion. Celtic fans are looking for something to cling on to. They're looking for something to believe in that's a bit more lovable, if that's the right word, than what the Lennon reign was, because it became so turgid, and the warning signs had been there for a wee while that it was slipping, and they get ignored. So I think there is a real desire for a modern, forward-thinking manager or first-team coach to come in, hence why someone like Maresca would be desirable and also fashionable for a lot of Celtic fans. There's also the pragmatic side, which says you don't get the 2.5-3 years that Gerrard got at Rangers at Celtic. You just will not get that. A project manager may need that time to become successful, and he or they will not get that time at Celtic. So because of that, I think you have to go with someone that's a bit more tried and tested. I've been saying for a number of weeks, I think it'll be Steve Clark, not necessarily that I want him, but I think Steve Clark ticks a lot of boxes for the Celtic board, because he's probably the safest pair of hands out there that would take the job.
I think you make a very valid point as well, Miff. I look out there in terms of actually managers, you're absolutely right. There's not a lot of managers that are kind of jumping out at us in terms of the trophy-laden managers that are there, but I think there's only the one that jumps out at me the most. Again, it's by far the most attractive coach to me, and it kind of falls into the kind of Rodgers Rose, Eddie Howe, when you're mentioning that. I just feel as if, as I said, it's you kind of mentioned his damaged goods. He had a great year reputation as Bournemouth, and then he turned a bit sour. But this is an opportunity for an Eddie Howe to come in and actually make a mark in terms of to come in and actually win something, basically, to take his development that step further. This guy is getting touted potentially for a future England manager a few years ago as well. So there is actually ability there in terms of managerial ability. So that's only one that for me, again, in terms of kind of tried and tested established management that I believe can probably come in, and it really excite the fans as well. So I just got to kind of take your point on board, Miff. I could just take kind of that's what kind of just jumps to mind for myself.
I'm similar, Chris. I think, you know, an Eddie Howe really excites me. And the thing about Eddie Howe, if you want to compare him to an Enzo Maresca, is young man as he is, he's been a manager for a long, long time now, several years in the Premiership, 4 or 5 years in the Premiership, I think. You can't not learn from that. And he's experienced, and he's taken dressing rooms, and he's had the ups and downs and everything else in between. And I just think that's the difference in terms of what he would offer. And with all due respect to Maresca, who's only ever coached, you know, kids and guys at under 23 level. You know, at the moment, as the name suggests, he coaches kids who are under 23 years of age. That's fine. And they'll all look up to Enzo Maresca and say, all right, you know, he's the man. Try doing that when you've got hardened professionals touching 30 and you're falling out with them.
Well, just on that point, Rangers' successes came from a very similar appointment. However, they had to wait, you know, the best part of 3 years before they saw any success.
Yeah.
That's not going to fly at Celtic.
Yeah, you fancy sitting tight till the 2024 season for the next league title?
No, thanks.
Absolutely not, and then some. So, yeah, that just shows that, as I say, you know, as opposed to John Kennedy, who I think is a talented coach but is learning on the job, we need to get someone in who's absolutely ready for the job. One thing, just to go back slightly to the Rangers game, when John Kennedy looked down at his options on the bench in terms of striking, he had Lee Griffiths, he had Patrick Klamala, and nowhere to be seen was Albion Ayeti. Any ideas what's going on there?
Try to do a bit of surfing online to actually find out whether or not he was injured. Can he find anything? So it is a bit of a head scratcher. Again, I said this in the show the other night. Again, I'm a fan of Albion Ayeti. Seems to get in a great position. He works hard. I think obviously again he's suffered this season because he's not had the deliveries in there. He's not had the service basically. But no, that's quite concerning. So whether it's, I don't know, something behind the scenes, fitness, to be determined.
Apparently Kennedy thought he was one of the mannequins where he practiced free kicks.
I mean, I agree with you, Chris, in terms of I think he has something to offer, and he showed in flashes that he can be a decent frontman. I think just to look at Odson Edwards' chance where he was wiped out by Barisic for a Stonewall penalty, Ayeti takes that first time, Griffiths takes that first time. There's different type of strikers, of course, in the modern game. And I think he does take that first time if he's fit and available to be there. But the fact that he doesn't feature in a squad that, I think there's 9 subs allowed nowadays. So if you can't get in that 20-odd man squad, having signed for 5-odd million, I just think that speaks volumes for the guy.
Warning signs, definitely warning signs.
Yeah. So I think just to give you the stats, in 27 appearances for Celtic, he's got 6 goals. It's not top drawer, is it?
No.
No. So I think if you're finding yourself out that squad, and with all due respect and not a lot of respect, if you're behind Patrick Klamala in the pecking order, something's going wrong with you.
Big time. Yeah. Again, I was not a big fan of Klamala either. Again, if that is the case, then no, some serious questions need to be asked there.
Yeah. So the wonder is, I think John Kennedy today against Rangers has got a bit more out of a few guys that have struggled. So, you know, we've agreed that Laxalt had a decent game. Edward and El Yunusi linked well up top. Christie and flashes. McGregor showed some you know, stuff that we expect to see from him, and so on. So there's an improvement there, but there'll need to be a serious improvement on guys like Ayeti and Barkas if they're going to have a future at Celtic. One further encouraging sign from the game against Rangers is the ongoing partnership, or the blossoming partnership, between Chris Iyer and Stephen Welsh. Miff, what's your take on that?
Yeah, I've been quite encouraged by that. Unfortunately, we believe, or it looks likely, that Iyer won't be there next season.
Don't break my heart, Miff. Don't break my heart.
Well, as a case, you would break the bank to keep him, because he has been a shining star this season. And I think that tells you something. If somebody has been a regularly consistent performer this season, they've obviously got something about them, because they've been able to do it when the chips have really been down and everything's been falling apart around about them.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen a lot of chat online, and for people that who I know and respect, people that even people that go on my supporters bus, that don't really rate Welsh for some reason. They don't seem to think he's got it long term. I can understand that, because he maybe stature, he maybe doesn't look like a dominant type centre half, and also whilst he's still young, he seems to be quite hash bash when he's clearing the ball. You know, he always seems like he's not really quite getting a full foot or a full head on it. But I do think as he's played more games positionally, he's got a hell of a lot better, and he does seem to work really well in tandem with Iyer. So I know I've been critical of the defence in terms of set pieces, but that's not just down to one or two guys. That's a collective thing. But I think in general play, we're not exactly getting, you know, kind of split wide open with those two at the centre of the defence, whereas, like we've seen when Duffy, Beaton are in the team, those two are in practically at the centre mid position, getting turned on the, you know, just absolute kamikaze defending. With those two, you're just not seeing that, and I think that is really to their credit.
I can understand where you're coming from, because I was the same opinion. I thought he was very raw, and he doesn't have that stature as well in terms of height and the physical.
Lovely shed.
Beautiful.
To be envied.
Armstrong.
But
I'll do that one, big man.
Oh, cheers, mate. What I was really, really impressed, particularly today, about Welsh was his ball retention. I thought his ball retention today was fantastic. There were sometimes So you come into a skit again, it doesn't matter what team it is again, but you come into a Celtic team and you've got a personality like Scott Brown in front of you. Scott Brown was trying to dictate the play in some instances today in terms of saying shift it left, shift it right. But he was taking it upon himself in terms of whether to drive forward and to actually open up the play a wee bit as well. But these are just wee things, but again, these are big things when it comes onto part because again, he's been his own man, he's been his own personality, and he's doing what probably Ayer has done as well. So it's just, at start, it was really, really good. That was just one thing I spotted today. I thought, that's quite interesting to see him doing that.
And other than being almost knocking Welsh unconscious with a clearance, the Bain, I thought, has this, I know that, I don't look at me like that, you know. I thought Bain's distribution was actually really, really good today. And he managed to, between them, Welsh, Ayer, and Bain, they managed to seem to take a lot of pressure off the defence by the way that they were switching the ball about at the back, which was really the foundation for a lot of our attacks because we seemed to knock Rangers out of their shape quite quickly. And I do think part of it was Rangers have, you know, they've exerted quite a lot over the past 2 weeks or so, and Thursday night was obviously pretty draining for them on various different levels. We really had a chance today just to go for their throat, and to me today just feels like an opportunity missed. We could have went there, put our stamp on it, beat them, and let's be honest, even the way we did go about the game today was good enough to win it. We had chances to win it. To me, it just feels like an opportunity missed. But it's hard to be overly critical of the individuals within the team, except for Kenny, because his poor moments were just so notable.
Yeah, I think I've flagged it, and I think you're right, you know, we can give Scott Bain the benefit of the doubt to a huge extent because for 85-odd minutes, he was spot on, and I think Jonjo Kenny, first game of this ilk, you may maybe give him, again, a wee bit of slack on it that, you know, maybe he struggled with, I'm saying the occasion, obviously no fans in attendance, but he didn't quite get it. But I think, you know, that aside, across the board, every one of Celtic's players were, you know, were at least, you know, 7 out of 10 and all that stuff. I think what I do really like about Stephen Welsh, and you touched on the Duffy and Beaton stuff there, Miff, in a good way, he doesn't make the headlines, right? So Duffy makes the headlines because throwing this one, you know, into his own net almost, or he's brought this guy down the edge of the box, or he's given that away in different things. Welsh is just nice and steady. He doesn't do anything fancy. He's not, you know, he's not particularly imposing, as you say, in terms of his stature, but he's just a nice, tidy player. And he seems to have a threat, by the way, in the opposition box. Yep. He scored a decent header a number of weeks ago. He had a decent attempt today from a corner. So despite his lack of fight, he's got something to offer there, hasn't he?
Ball, again, back to a point earlier on, ball retention, did he? Again, three defenders first and foremost, for me, they defend, right? And I think Stephen Welsh has been doing that, and he's been doing it, again, under the radar, he's been defending pretty well. Again, that's a sign of, a good starter, a good grounding for a defender. Because when you're getting a defender, a Shane Duffy in the past coming in, Calamity here, a near Beaton sending off here, just do your job, play or just pass it on to somebody else who's going to create, who's going to take a ball that further up the park. And that's why I'm really impressed with my day. As I said, it's just that ball retention. It's about keeping the ball and moving on and just keep nice and simple.
Yeah.
I think we should touch on Duffy. I know we probably weren't planning to. He's not been involved at all. But what you've not been seeing for the Celtic defence is what you were seeing for him. And that was going for a ball that's head tight, missing it completely. Going to diving in ridiculously when he's the last man, when all he has to do is stand off, guys, diving in. I think the one that springs to mind to me was a Milan game where in the first half he stood off the boy and he's let the boy have a 25-yard run at him instead of being tight to him. And then in the second half he's went to go and get tight to the boy when there's been nobody behind him and the boy's just spun in. I think we conceded two goals directly from him making, you know, the wrong decision. I think it was a St Mirren game, he's went to header a ball, completely missed it. He just continually makes the same mistakes over and over again. We went through about 4 months of that before he eventually got dropped out of the team.
Mm-hmm.
So these things, maybe Welsh is looking good because it's in comparison with this because of what we've received. I'm conscious of that. But to my eyes, there really does seem a good, decent partnership developing there. And there is a lack of general panic in the defence. It's more now centred around the set-piece area. How we fix that, I don't know. We probably need a bit more height in the team in general. We seem to lack a bit of physicality, and I thought that was evident today again as well at times. But I think set-piece defending is just as much psychological as it is physical.
I think
it's about willing to get your body in, you know, in the way of the ball getting in.
Again, I'm going to touch on some of Martin O'Neill's chat on Sky Sports after the game. James McFadden was mentioning the various centre-halves he had and the Bobo Baldies and the Johan Mialbis, etc., and that these guys were just magnets to head a ball. You know, they were just drawn to the ball and they attacked it quite aggressively. And Martin O'Neill said they absolutely done that for him and he could trust them to do so. Whereas some of the guys he's worked with in recent jobs, I think he was indicating, and some of the guys in the modern game don't have that thing around. You know, they're almost afraid to throw themselves at it.
Well, Ayer, I wouldn't put Ayer in that category. I mean, Ayer's a big lad, a big physical lad. He has great athleticism and agility, but he doesn't go out to attack balls for cut. In fact, you seen him the day, him and he got a free kick gave against him with Goldson at the back post.
Yeah.
Goldson was just kind of quite easily holding them off. There's none of that. I'm going to get across the front of you, that sort of, I mean, Big Bobo, you used to see Big Bobo running in when the ball was coming in the box. It was a thing of beauty. But, with our defence and our team as a whole, is there MD in there that would run and attack that? But, I mean, even going back to fairly recent history, when Musa used to cover the front post, Musa was just like a third centre. He was brilliant at doing that.
Yeah. I think they do lack aggression. And I don't mean, going out and swinging elbows and punches and anything like that. Just controlled aggression as a footballer is important, and Martin O'Neill's team absolutely had it. And out with Scott Brown, and I think, he'll start to phase things down, in due course. There's not a lot of it around, is there? And there's talented players there. You certainly couldn't call Hudson Edward aggressive.
Just broke my heart mentioning Musa there, man.
Yeah. Chris Ayer, class defender as he is, he's not an aggressive centre-half. And I said, you can run through the whole team. I don't think there's anybody there. You would describe Duffy as aggressive, but not... not in a good way. He's not got the quality that you need to go with it. So as I say, controlled aggression is important, and we seriously lack that throughout.
You'd think as well, if you're lax out, if you just chucked your braids about, that would be quite off.
Take some desire.
I'd take some desire,
Yeah, true stuff. So just one of my beautiful segues coming up. Speaking of left backs, lax out.
Seamless, man.
What you guys might have picked up on last week, I thought this was really interesting actually. Kieran Tierney was mic'd up for the North London Derby against Spurs. Don't know if you guys seen the footage. Get it on YouTube. It's about 5 minutes long. Arsenal have put it out. Really, really interesting. Just purely from a footballing point of view, to see how a guy like that takes himself through a game, how he cajoles his teammates, how he shows aggression, how he claims for different things. And it was really, really interesting. So a real focus on Tierney. And it just shows you the very natural leader that he has become. So let's not get too upset by the fact that he's gone. But what I thought was interesting was, I don't think there's a guy in our current team that you could have mic'd up and shown in that same light that would have been anywhere near as impressive. We've got good players, but we're kind of mousy, aren't we? That are kind of quiet, mild-mannered players. And that's not enough, isn't it? You're not going to win leagues with that.
No. And again, that's the reason why you talk about those type of players, and what my expectation would be of Chris Ayer if he remained to be a Celtic player. That's the type of player. You see him being very vocal. I look back even a few years ago, if you remember his tackle against Rangers, last minute tackle, and he celebrates it like a goal, and I just seen that bit of personality, and I just feel he can develop into that type of player you're referring to. And I just feel as if, again, there's not an awful lot about it. Again, that's what you're basically saying. There is not an awful lot about it. And that's what ultimately we need. We need to be aggressive in the right way.
In fairness, that's where the Duffy signing should have made sense. And did to all of us. Because he looked to us, and Julian and Ayer, I think we looked at them playing and we thought, decent pairing, but we could probably do with somebody that wants to put their head in where it hurts. And that's why a Duffy-esque centre-half was signed, because we felt Julian and Ayer were good, but a bit too nice. And the problem you've got now is, if you take Julian out of the team, there's just a complete lack of height there. Just a complete lack of height through the full team.
And it shows you the importance of, partnerships across the board. So, your front two is important, your kind of, midfield berth is important, and certainly your centre-half pairing. And we've never quite got it, and I suppose that's why it's quite encouraging, at least, at the moment, to see Welsh and Ayer connecting pretty well, but whether that can be a thing moving forward remains to be seen. To go back to the Kieran Tierney and the mic'd up thing, as I say, I thought it was just very fascinating from a footballing point of view. Question for both you lads, and I'm obviously asking you on the hop here, you've not seen this ahead of this one, but if you could pick any Celtic player from the past to mic up, who would it be? Who would you love to have, had a real kind of close insight into? And I would always think about guys who are, leaders and vocal guys, and I mean, it'd be fascinating to have maybe even going really far back into like a Billy McNeil type or a Bertie Auld, real aggressive characters in the game. But is there anyone that you guys can think of? I'll come to you first, Miff. You're looking like you're searching your Celtic archive in your head.
Yes. The obvious one for a man of my age and era is Paul McStay.
Mm-hmm. A fairly quiet guy, though.
A fairly quiet guy, but somebody who played through, he was an interesting, he played right through the generations for, I think he was in the team for 82, 95, 96. So
I'll check that for you.
Paul McStay would be the obvious one for me. Of more recent times, Paul Lambert.
Right, okay. What about yourself, Chris? Anyone that springs to mind?
Neil Lennon. Neil Lennon for me. Again, I think about Neil Lennon, just again, obviously, the trouble he went through as well as a player. And again, he was a target, you know, talking about obviously in the week of all weeks, again, in terms of all the nonsense that's been going on. Again, I'd love to have just seen again in terms of what the kind of thought process with Neil Lennon is. And he was a very calm player and a very influential player for Celtic. And I always kind of wondered that way what was kind of going through his head on the park as well. And again, it didn't faze him. We know that, we see that. Just be interested to see what his kind of feelings were, how he kind of dictated the play as well. But yeah. I'm laughingly just thinking about just one more as well, the holy goalie. Again, Arthur Bowden, just want to see what big Arthur, yeah. Arthur would be spiking in the football park.
There'd be some decent entertainment there.
Absolutely.
Interesting that the three players that you've mentioned there are three centre midfielders, Paul McStay, Lambert, and obviously Neil Lennon as well. And I think Scott Brown could fall into that category. So obviously, as I say, you know, he's maybe winding down his time at Celtic, but...
I think that would be quite X-rated.
Maybe so, but on his day in top form, you know, he'd have been an interesting character to watch. I wonder as well if this is something that's going to come into the modern game. I don't know the background on that one and why it came to be, but I thought it was just very interesting as an experiment in general, and I would definitely suggest that you go and watch it.
Just on a more general, a Celtic related general point, is that we probably were very underappreciative of just how good Tierney was for the overall play, not just defensively, but he was a real contributor to our attacking play as well, and he was ours for nothing. You know, he just developed in our team, and not take him for granted in any way, but he's just been such a huge miss.
But I think you look at it as well, again, maybe us looking inwards, thinking to ourselves, right, could he really do it at that level? And then he kept going up and up and up. In terms I'm talking about for us, and then he's taking that as well, obviously down to Arsenal as well, because you've seen him, think it was Benfica the other week again. I think it was his assist as well. I'm sure. Who was it they were playing during the week actually?
I need to get
it. I'm actually trying to think who it was. Wasn't it Benfica?
Was it Olympiacos?
He just dropped his shoulder, go, and he just took your boy completely out of the game. And it's just, he's fantastic. It's a sore one to take, because there's a number of players that when we look back in the recent history, you mentioned the Moose as well, and it's just,
I think the best we can hope for with Tierney is he gets homesick, serves out his contract, just comes back up the road.
I think you've not seen the last of Tierney in a Celtic shirt, but it depends whether we get him at 28 or 36 or whatever we get him at. But yeah, he's definitely a real quality player, and I think he could kick on and go to another level. You know, he's playing obviously at a high level down there, but every time you see him on I don't know, a match today or whatever, they absolutely rave about him.
The debate again they're having down south now is Andy Robertson v Kieran Tierney argument. I know that's been going down around social media.
The four that they keep mentioning is Reguilón for Spurs, who's a very impressive player. Dina for Everton, who I don't think is as good as Tierney, or Robertson for that matter. Tierney and Robertson. Robertson has had a poor season this season in terms of his attacking input, but I think that's just because Liverpool just seem to have lost the plot completely as an attacking force for the time being, at least anyway, whereas Tierney kind of ploughs a lone man forward down that left hand side, and it is quite remarkable. I just wonder, I know this isn't the Arsenal exchange or the Kieran Tierney exchange or anything, but I don't think he looks fully integrated into that Arsenal squad. There's something, I don't know, there's just...
I think Arsenal aren't quite Arsenal as we know them at the moment as well. You can see the absolute love that Mikel Arteta has for him. You know, you see him embracing him post-match. Is Aubameyang their captain just now? I just think it's a certainty that Tierney will be the next Arsenal captain if they can keep him, and then he'll kick on.
That's what I mean. I think there's a few... I don't mean to sound old-fashioned when I say this, but I think Arsenal always had that reputation as being a bit soft, and a few big-time Charlies being there. To me, there seems a lot of guys there on big money that aren't putting in the required shift, whereas somebody like Tierney, whether he was earning 10 bob or 50 grand, he just plays the way that he plays, and he always has done. So I think guys like Tierney will be absolutely critical to Arsenal. You'll see if Arteta's staying, Tierney will stay, but like you, Tino, I think he's actually destined for bigger things. I think he could easily go to a Man City.
Yeah.
Something like that.
He definitely could, and good luck to him. So we'll kick on now. We'll move back from some Arsenal chat back to Celtic. So again, looking at the more general picture just now, obviously disappointing not to get the result against Rangers. Where do we think this leaves John Kennedy's chances? Has anything changed? Does it improve them? Does it not?
I'm going to make a bold statement.
Mm-hmm.
This is a bold statement.
Go for it.
I think they might give him the job if he wins the Scottish Cup.
In the showers?
Potentially.
You don't want to break tradition. Tradition's important.
Big Pedro with his Gant speedos on.
What an last act.
Final act.
So yeah, I mean, if John Kennedy, so obviously he's not got the result against Rangers today. We've obviously got five league games left after the split, one of which will be at Ibrox. If he wins four or all five of them, and then the Scottish Cup.
I don't think league that's gone. I think if he wins the Scottish Cup, he's got a really good chance of getting the job. Yeah. That's just how I feel. I think that would be a very Celtic thing to do.
And how would you feel about it? Would you be pleased enough?
No.
No, not for you. What about you, Chris?
No. I just feel as if I think we can't, obviously we can win the Scottish Cup. I've got a bit of encouragement after today that I think
I've already told you we are winning the Scottish Cup. take it as read.
I actually feel we've got a really good chance now in terms of winning the Scottish Cup after seeing today's performance. I'd be really, really disappointed if we did win the Scottish Cup, right? Sorry, and John Kennedy's Celtic manager. I'd really permanently. I'd be really,
yeah,
really, really disappointed.
I don't think that's unreasonable. I think a lot of people will feel like that. You know, they'll respect John Kennedy. Be great to win the Scottish, but if he then moves on, then I think that's okay. But
I just get the feeling that the Celtic board will want to play safe. That's if Kennedy wins the Scottish Cup and then is backed in the summer to a degree of, you know, they make the appropriate changes that have to make, players get shipped out that want to go, they identify some targets and bring them in, which is how Celtic have worked. You know, signings have been made, comings and goings have been chatted about whilst we've got an interim manager, and it suggests that there's obviously some form of transfer committee working in the background somewhere. You know, somebody like Kennedy then just staying in situ. I'm not trying to geese the fear here, lads, I'm just saying that I've got a feeling that as this progresses, and if Celtic do win the Scottish Cup, I could very much see Kennedy staying in charge. I'm not saying it's the right decision, I'm not saying I'm happy about it.
Yeah.
I'm just saying I really could see it happen.
Mm-hmm. I could as well. You know, we've experienced the Celtic board in recent times, and it wouldn't be unlike them to make such an appointment. But you used the word safe, Miff. I think it's anything but a safe appointment, and by safe I mean in the eyes of the fans, I think the fans could revolt, and I know they've obviously had their issues this season in terms of some of the protests that we've seen, but as I've said before, for me, John Kennedy is the right guy at the wrong time, or potentially the right guy at the wrong time. And I just think it's so important, given what we've experienced and what we've suffered, you know, which I think is a fairly accurate word to be using, what we've suffered this season, I think the board really need to get this one right. It's so, so important. It's potentially the biggest appointment in, you know, the modern history of Celtic. You know, Peter Lovell's been there since 2003, and, you know, there's been some big appointments and loads of success during that time. And I'm not, you know, dismissing that at all. But we've now reached this crossroads where we're deciding, you know, what's the direction moving forward, not just for next year, but for the next 5 and 10 and 15 years. And it's just so important. And I think that's why John Kennedy may suffer, because I think a clean break is probably best.
Well, to my mind, you know, I'm saying that about Kennedy. What I feel personally is that we do need a big name to take us forward. We need somebody with a big personality to come in, lift the players, but also get them really, really organised, more organised than they have been, particularly defensively and from set pieces. That I think that requires a big personality to come in just to, you know, to lift the players from where they're on the floor at the moment, let's be honest. They need somebody to come in and just inject a bit of life into them. So will John Kennedy do that whilst he's made small improvements? And there's been improvements. You always look at individual performances and see that they're improving. That's to his credit that he's come in and done that. The long-term job requires someone to, you know, we shouldn't just be looking at next season. We should be looking at the, you know, the season's coming after. We want a structure and a plan in place. But I think it was announced earlier in the week about the coefficient, and that there'll be direct entry into the Champions League as of next season. So invariably, whilst the 10 was important this season, and it was important to Celtic fans and should have been important to the board and the players, when it comes to money, Dominic Mackay isn't in yet. You could actually argue next season's far more important.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about that, and just, you know, just stresses the importance of the weeks ahead. I think as well for the new head coach, whoever that may be, and I do think it will be a new head coach as opposed to John Kennedy, there are so many key objectives for this guy to come in, and it's going to be such a busy summer. I mean, you know, just rhyming them off. First of all, he's going to have to deal with the guys that he loses, right? You know, potentially Edwards, Ayers, etc. He's then going to handle and integrate whoever is brought in, whether that's through a transfer committee or otherwise. So he's got to integrate, I'd say, at least half a dozen new players. He's also got to lift the guys who, as you say, Miff, are on the floor or similar. He's got to motivate them and get the best out of the McGregors and the Forrests and whoever's remaining. He's then also got to make sure we qualify for Europe, first of all, make progress in Europe, and retain a league title. It's huge, isn't it? There's so many key objectives. And I just think that's why we can't afford to experiment with an Enzo Maresca. Imagine putting that on Enzo Maresca, saying, here's your objectives for your first season as a full-time football manager, Enzo. Listen to this. He'd be nowhere near the job, and nor should he be, I don't think. Fergal Harkin looks like he's maybe close to coming in as director of football, which is great. That would seem a good move on paper.
I do like the undertones. What's Fergal Harkin?
But I don't think we should then say, okay, because we've got Fergal Harkin, we then need to look at bringing in a Man City link for your coach. I just think it's too big a job for someone who's got no experience.
The thing is, though, that unfortunately, that there is a large swathe of Celtic fans, hard to tell because of the what you see online, but a lot of Celtic fans want that kind of romantic appointment, that sort of almost Project Diala-like appointment where we go, oh, we can appoint somebody who's less heralded but will come and play this type of football and develop young players. That will require time. Not enough of the Celtic fan base will be willing to give any new coach that time. So it depends what way we want to go, what type of club do we want to be. If you make that appointment, great. Don't expect to be qualifying for the Champions League the next season, because you will have to allow that guy time to, you know, bring the right players in, develop. Much like what Gerrard had to do at Rangers. You know, he wasn't a success overnight. Mm-hmm. He had to build, and it really, really needed patience and the patience of the board. So would the fans be willing to give any new manager that patience? I would tell you that the answer, the vast majority of fans will not.
Yeah, I mean, patience isn't something that you often associate with any new Celtic manager. And the bottom line is, and it's wrong, but the way it is you must hit the ground running and you must win the league title, and anything else is failure. That's how it is, isn't it?
Yep, absolutely. I just feel that I actually get quite excited with Enzo Maresca, link, and I think as well, if it is a Fergal Harkin appointment, I think it just naturally fits. But at the same time, he needs to hit the ground. The guy needs to really hit the ground running. I think in terms of the blueprint of an appointment such as that as well, is that it's to tap into maybe kind of unknown players that we have not just under the radar at Man City. That again, I can use Olivier Ncham again. It was good for a bit, and then obviously disappeared off the radar. But
Frimpong,
another one. That's Patrick Roberts. I think that's where again we could potentially go. But I don't. Again, the guy who's really, really got to hit the ground running.
Yeah. So let me ask you then, Chris. So you're quite keen on the sound of someone like Maresca. If I tell you that we get Maresca, we play free-flowing football, it's great to watch, but we don't win the league next year or the year after.
Unacceptable. That's what I'm saying. The guy really needs to come in and hit the ground running. That's the reason, I think, as I said, in terms of the blueprint behind the thinking, right? But as I said, ultimately, he needs to deliver. Because if he doesn't deliver, the guy's got a job.
The other side to this, though, is where are all these proven winners that are trophy-laden knocking down the door to become the next Celtic manager?
Well, that's true. And, you know, is it a case where Celtic just really need to push the boat out to get the guy they want? They need to spend a few quid to say, listen, we know you're a man in demand, or a man even potentially in a job at this moment in time, you know, and really make a statement appointment.
And did you have any managerial breaking news for us, Chris?
Alex Neil, left press North End. I was actually going to throw that in earlier on to say big name, Alex Neil. There we go.
So troops, if yous are listening and yous weren't excited about Steve Clarke, you might be now.
So you wouldn't take Alex Neil, would you? In fact, I don't even know why I'm asking the question. I've wasted some good airtime there asking that question when I should have been talking
is
about fans.
Is this ever good airtime tomorrow?
Some people think
it's alright. Yeah, sorry.
But yeah, it just shows you that. I mean, you know, there's three of us in a room trying to, you know, come to some sort of agreement and can't. It also asks the question, you know, there's a lot of talk just now about Celtic fans becoming more vocal, and that, you know, the Celtic Trust and various others are making moves there, and, you know, credit to anyone trying to improve what's happening at Celtic. But I just think it's a real tall order to try and get any sort of fan voice and to decide what Celtic's future could be, you know, because there's so many, you know, we all know the headline decisions about, you know, who your manager is and who you sign and different things. There's more to run in a football club than just that. Someone asked the question, someone who speaks a lot of sense on Twitter, but asked the question, should Peter Lawwell be put on gardening leave between now and the end of the season? That would be absolute madness. Why would you do that? Because being CEO of Celtic isn't, as I say, just about signing players and, you know, making sure I've got the right manager in place. There's a business to run there. There's a multi-million pound business
to run. And I think that question itself comes from a fan who's blinkered by the football element. That's not uncommon. Fans look at, you know, what have you done for me lately? What's happening on the park? When's my new manager coming in? When's a new structure getting announced? When's a new signings getting announced? Celtic have already lost the league. Right, come on, I'm moving on already. That's understandable. That's just how football fans are. The reality is, though, that Celtic is a huge commercial enterprise, and whether fans like it or not, Peter Lawwell has been hugely successful at building that commercial enterprise out of the very fans who have been slating him. So, I mean, that takes some going. The issue you've got, a point we have made repeatedly over a number of podcasts, is we are now really running out of time. We're in mid-March / end of March. We don't have long to prepare. All things told, I mean, for the Champions League or the Europa League qualifiers that will be coming up. So therefore, the time that we are losing means we're losing preparation time for next season. If we know players aren't staying, just make the moves to get them out the door now, because there is, or if we really, really want to keep them, get the talks done, get the money on the table and keep them. Hard to say that when you don't have a new manager, because you never know, the new manager might come in and not fancy, excuse me, the players that the board or the current backroom team want to keep, but it just makes it all the more critical. You know, what you can see is we're not that far away from where we need to be just now, but if you break that team up and move a lot of people on, then you might be. We're saying that because we don't know who's still to come in. But it's such a tricky and, what's the word I'm looking for? We're just really at a crossroads, and we need to get that next decision right. And the quicker we make that decision and bring somebody in, the better for everybody.
Yeah, I mean, it's a precarious position. That's the bottom line. I'll do your words.
Thanks
for you,
Timothy. Thanks for that.
But we're in this position where, yeah, there are so many key decisions to be made. And as you mentioned, the John Kennedy might think somebody's a superstar, say it's Christie. The new guy coming in might say, absolutely not, he's not the kind of guy I want. And until we make some firm decisions, we're in this kind of limbo position. And football ultimately is all about opinions, whether it's watching a game down your local park or if you're a top level coach. Some guys like some players, some guys don't. Some guys like systems, formations, whatever it may be, zonal marking, not zonal marking, you name it. It's all about opinions, regardless of what level of football you're at. And we're in this position where we cannot make those decisions confidently moving forward. And I mentioned the objectives for the new guy, you know, influx of players, qualifying for Europe, winning the league no less, lifting the morale in the camp. It's just so tough to do. And until we start making firm appointments, we can't do it. We can maybe, you know, do some things in the background. And I'm sure John Kennedy's got a level of professionalism and different things going on. But we're in this halfway house right now, and it's frustrating to be.
Yeah, you asked the question about Peter Lawwell as well. We can see that we're building it. We're in a period of transition here now. Peter Lawwell needs to be building towards that. And what I mean by that is Dominic Mackay coming in and having the foundations in place. We're talking about player sales, player purchasing again. Talking about that earlier, obviously during the week there. So in order to actually do that transition, as I said, you need guys like that in place in order to facilitate it. I know I'm getting frustrated. I get like a lot of many other Celtic fans. Again, in terms of the transition, we don't see it. But there must be stuff that's going on in the background now to say, like, in terms of the movement. But it's got to be. We've got to be. There's got to be.
It's because we don't hear a lot just now, but I also understand the tricky position the club are in terms of they can't come out and say, just to keep you posted, guys, but we spoke to a couple of guys, yep, he can't make it, but he might be, yep, interested, and so on and so forth.
I must say, it was quite nice there for that couple of weeks where we were at the news, weren't we? We weren't really, you know, that feeling of horror you were getting for maybe September all the way through, yeah, after Christmas, where it seemed to be every week there was another disastrous story coming out about Celtic. It was quite nice just for a week. It seemed like the team were away quietly preparing, and to be honest with you, they probably did give us a performance that suggested they, you know, they had planned and prepared properly for the game. But again, I could just get back to my point, it just feels so much like an opportunity missed.
Yeah, it does. You know, in terms of, you know, the game against Rangers, it does feel like there was improvements, and Matthew, you've spoken about the importance of performance, and I totally agree with you, and it's a Celtic thing, isn't it? It's not good, yep, enough just to win. So it was good, I suppose we didn't get the win, but we got the performance, it showed that there's improvements there, but we need to now turn that up a notch and turn them into wins. Chris, just any final thoughts from yourself? Are you feeling hopeful at this moment in time? So as Miff says, we're mid to late March. Are you feeling hopeful? Are you still a bit down in the dumps? Where are you at?
No, I'm feeling a wee bit better after today, to be honest with you. I do really, really feel better about it. And we could go and get a Scottish Cup win. Yeah, let's get in again. That's to let them know, no, we're not away. And yous are not in the ascendancy. We're not far away. So I'm being very, very optimistic considering I've been down in the doldrums for a number of weeks now.
I've been worried about you, mate, so it's good to hear those words. What about yourself, Miff? Where are you at?
Probably just got to go home and get drunk, Tino, if I'm being careful with you.
Drowning your sorrows out.
Just go home and get drunk. And I'm probably going to order the Alex Neil CSC banner.
to plan ahead. Are you going to rip up your Stevie Clark one?
It's Stevie Clark one. I don't know. I'll keep that just in case.
Just in case. It's always good to have a backup.
Unlike Celtic, I've got a plan B.
Good stuff. So Celtic now head into the end of the season splat, a full 20 points behind Rangers, and it's clear there's work to be done to restore the confidence and killer instinct within the squad if they're to mount a credible challenge next season. It's also clear that a number of players from the current squad will be moving on in the summer, and some strong characters must be brought in to replace them as the rebuild takes shape. My thanks as always to Miff and to Chris for joining me on today's episode of the Celtic Exchange. And finally, our thanks to you for listening. And if you're enjoying what we do, please remember to follow and review us on Spotify, Apple and wherever you get your podcasts. And we'll see you again next week.
Sponsored by 1010 Podcasts.